Welcome back to Quantum Gravity 2020. This morning we've got a couple of interesting talks. Our first speaker is Herman Verlinde from Princeton, who's going to be telling us about quantum gravity from the string theory perspective. Before we get started, I just wanted to add that Herman will be taking questions during the talk. So if you have a question, just raise your hand. And at the appropriate point, we'll let you ask your question. So take it away, Herman.
Okay. Just making sure that everyone can hear me. We're good? Good. Yep. Okay. First of all, when I got the invitation for the conference, I should thank the organizers, and I was hoping to be there, of course, in person and have many interesting discussions, but I'm happy to see that there will be opportunity for discussion panels later on. And indeed, as Rob was saying, if you have questions during my talk, please feel free to ask them directly. Again, this title was given because I was late with giving my own title. But indeed, naturally, since I'm a string theorist and I'm thinking about quantum gravity, I tend to at least try to explain at least what my perspective is on how quantum gravity questions should be, one can now be thinking about them. So indeed, I'll be talking about some recent work I've been doing with a graduate student. And let me see if I can actually change that. Akash Gul and a paper that I published earlier in this year. And it connects with indeed developments currently going on in string theory. But I should say already that many of the topics I'll be talking about will not be directly related to strings, but they're definitely sort of the string theory is sort of the organizing principle still behind many of these ideas. But the ideas that are sort of now emerging indeed have to do with things like entanglement, indeed semi-classical solutions to gravity. And really, of course, the goal is to fuse quantum mechanics with our understanding of gravity. Later on, if you don't have any questions, you should ask me about the coupled harmonic oscillator because I can tell you a few things about it. I'm serious. I'll start with a few questions, comments, a few slides more about sort of the big perspective. I like doing this a few times and it just indicate what my philosophy is in the context in which my talk should be seen. And to me, it's pretty striking. Again, if you think about what string theory has done over the last 25 years, we kind of moved from a period where the organizing principles of string theory and of GR, I would say, would really be those of symmetry, geometry, and locality. Whereas we're now talking about much more, you could say, random things, things like quantum chaos, potentially the multiverse, and of course holography is the organizing principle, and quantum information is really kind of one of the key tools. So this contrast to some extent between the old-fashioned way of sort of organizing physics and the new way of organizing it, the fact that we have to sort of keep all those principles all in the game is really what makes the field challenging. So to repeat what I was saying on the previous slide, so if I would organize or phrase my own kind of guiding principles, I would indeed say that holography, of course, the Beckerson-Hawking formula, quantum information theory, thermodynamics, locality and causality, and space-time dynamics, of course, are important. And currently, part of the guiding principle is indeed that we're now asking questions about what really does the quantum state of a space-time look like? And quantum many-body physics and conformal field theory, large N methods, and recently sort of tensor networks are indeed ways of addressing those questions. So if you're thinking about the rest of the talk, at least this is kind of the toolbox that are underlying a number of the ideas that I'll be talking about. And finally, sort of where does string theory fit into all of this? So that's, of course, again, through basically the ADS-CFT correspondence. We have string theory. And then there was indeed, of course, the realization that with D-brains, that effectively you can extract a formal field theory or a large end gauge theory, and more broadly, on the D-brains, there's some kind of quantum many-body system. And there should be some dictionary between these two. But more recently, we've been kind of guided by the idea that there are many properties already kind of in holography that one can extract from a more effective description. And that's especially true in lower dimensional models, but for example, like the SYK model or ADS3 CFT2, where indeed there is such a thing as a quantum gravity theory in the bulk. And there is also essentially a corresponding boundary theory that one could extract from it. So there's sort of an avatar of the holographic correspondence of the microscopic theory that is being found in sort of the low energy effective description. And one of the important things actually is that gravity is a pretty universal thing, of course. And this boundary effective dynamics is also quite universal. But in many cases, if I give you a given string theory, I have to give you much more detail. And the same is true for these quantum many-body systems. So indeed, the transition of this sort of more effective description to extract that from the fundamental description, you basically have to start looking at the universal behavior. So how do you do that? You often introduce ensembles of systems, and you can possibly average those. Or you look indeed at thermodynamic quantities. And on this side, you're going to find that those quantities are dominated by gravity. And on the other side, there's often some kind of Goldstone mode that starts appearing. So this is sort of a paradigm that I've been kind of following at least for the last 8-9 years. And I think we're still kind of often exploring things from this perspective. And in many cases, actually, we're mostly spending most of our time in these three corners. And we're not spending quite as much time nowadays on this corner, but it's really sort of in the end string theory that's organizing these relations. So that's sort of more of the general picture. I just don't assume that at this point there are questions, but if there are questions, I can still please feel free to interrupt. So again, I'm going to start again with my sort of one of my organizing principles. Lee, there is a question. Yep.
Lee has a question. Just one second. Lee, can you unmute yourself?
Fine. There we go. Hello?
Yep. Hello, we can hear you.
Very good, Herman. Just a very quick question about the six things you're trying to reconcile. If space is emergent or related to entanglement, then what does locality mean fundamentally?
Locality from the point of view, yeah. So indeed, I should say that indeed, this is one of the reasons why I was mentioning that we're kind of still very much halfway a program, I would, because there are many properties that normally we would indeed have applied indeed as one of our principles. For example, indeed, locality and potentially Lorentz invariance should be properties of a theory to a large degree of accuracy. On this side, whereas from the point of view of the boundary, it's quite mysterious how those properties actually arise, especially locality. Of course, we understand that locality should be an approximate property of quantum gravity, and it's precisely that particular tension that we're trying to sort of come to grips with. But we know that quantum field theory by itself would have to be replaced by something else as soon as we go to quantum gravity. But the symmetry principles of quantum field theory are still things that we want to keep. And it's that particular tension, which I think we haven't even come close to really kind of completely addressing. And string theory remarkably manages to do sort of both. At least it's still better at keeping the symmetries than many of these other descriptions. But what these other descriptions often manage to do better is to keep control of the quantum information theoretic content of the theory. And it's that particular tension that I think is really kind of at the heart of the questions we're trying to address. So indeed, so that's definitely sort of where I'm going. Indeed, I'm going to be talking about neat quantum information quantities. Again, the Bekenstein-Hawking formula, again, it's really kind of the Rosetta Stone. Again, that's the thing that's sort of driving our thinking. And it's actually a bit remarkable, if you think about it, that we still haven't fully kind of put the finger on it, what it really means. Because one thing, indeed, that we know it describes, at least it has been tested in many cases, and string theory, indeed, is one of the main tests of the interpretation of this formula as the microstates of a black hole with given properties. And so it's really counting a microscopic entropy. But more recently, the same relationship has shown up indeed in the Ryu-Takinagi formula, but also if you consider sort of eternal black holes, in which case this entropy is being interpreted as an entanglement entropy across an event horizon or across some kind of extremal surface. So those are two different interpretations. Microscopic entropy and entanglement entropy are two different things. And both interpretations actually are well kind of founded. I'll be mostly talking today about the entanglement entropy interpretation, but I'm trying to put the two things a little bit more in the same framework, the two types of interpretations. And as I mentioned, the interpretation in terms of a microscopic entropy is mostly strongly supported indeed through ADS, CFT, and string theory. And the second interpretation, indeed, the Ryu-Takinagi formula, and also the interpretation of this particular state here, which we call the thermal field double. It's an entangled state between two systems. And you could consider, for example, two holographic conformal field theories, put them in a thermal entangled state in such a way that if you trace over one of the two systems, you get the thermal density matrix on the other side. But this entanglement is sort of often believed to be essentially an equivalence, at least a quantum mechanical reflection of the fact that the two CFTs are connected. And indeed, since these are finite temperature systems, they should be describing black holes. But the two black holes are connected through this Einstein-Rosen bridge. Or from the point of view of a Penrose diagram, you may have an internal region that's, say, the near horizon ADS geometry of an entangled or connected two-sided black hole. But here I'm already immediately putting this near horizon geometry in an environment, and this could be a flat space in which this black hole is embedded. And then actually some new questions do emerge because at that point, the idea is that the entanglement that is close to the horizon is really represented by this state. But we do know that the system can start to evaporate and that over time, even this system, at least the near horizon geometry, will go into a mixed state because it's emitting Hawking radiation. So it's building up entanglement with the environment as well. So it's not as obvious that this particular state is really sort of the final story when it comes to the description of even a two-sided black hole. And it's that particular tension that I will try to investigate a little bit more closely. And indeed, that recent papers have been starting to investigate as well, and there's sort of new geometric ideas that people have sort of now stumbled on when it comes to studying evaporating black holes. And the context that I'll sort of try to put this question or this is really if we have a two-sided black hole, there's something a bit funny about the description of a two-sided black hole in terms of this thermal field double state. And the reason is that the thermal field double state is really an idealized pure state. It was really just invented as an idealized way of purifying a thermal state. It doesn't have any von Neumann entropy by itself because it's a pure state. Whereas a two-sided black hole clearly can have entropy, especially if it's embedded inside of an environment. It's a macroscopic object, it should have an entropy. And so it could be a logical question to ask, how much entropy can a two-sided black hole contain? And if you would ask anyone right now, I'm not sure if people would give you a straight answer. Some people might say, I cannot contain any entropy because it should be in a pure entangled state. Other people would say, hey, okay, well, the system will start to evaporate. Probably the answer would be that the entropy might be in between zero and twice the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. But I'm going to argue that there's a sort of a more preferred answer than just basically these two bounds. Okay, maybe this is a good time to stop again. If there are questions, please feel free to ask.
I don't see any questions, so why don't you just carry on?
I'll carry on. So, and I'm still continuing a little bit with sort of a more standard story, and then I'll start with the new things that I've been working on myself recently. So the first is, again, what leads to the identification between the thermal field double and this connected black hole? That was Maldacena's original argument, is that what you can do is you can view this state if you basically would flip this cat state into a brass state, then this looks like half the time evolution e to the minus beta over 2 times h. So it's the square root out of a thermal density matrix. And you can therefore indeed do a half of a thermal circle. You do time evolution over that half of a thermal circle. And the idea is that basically that once you have done the time evolution in the boundary system, because this is a state in the boundary system, then according to the holographic correspondence, what you have to do is you have to find the gravitational saddle point that connects with that boundary path integral. And in this case, that saddle point would be half a disk. And that half a disk has a natural middle point. And that middle point, indeed, once you analytically continue to Lorentzian signature, would be naturally the location of a horizon of a two-sided black hole. So that was basically the argument by Maldacena that this is a connected geometry and that it's a two-sided black hole. So that was the first sort of statement that microscopic entanglement might have something to do with the connectedness of space-time. A corollary basically of the same kind of picture is that if I would take the same state and I now start taking the trace over the left-hand side of this picture, I'm essentially taking the density matrix, first of all, of this half disk, which creates two half disks, and then I'm gluing them together on the part that I'm taking the trace on, and then I get this particular geometry, and this is my representation of a thermal density matrix. And these dotted lines here are basically the place where the state lives, the box state. Here it's a two-sided black hole. Here it's a one-sided black hole, but it's now in a mixed state. So that's why there are two, why it looks like a Pac-Man. And indeed, the entanglement over here is now become the thermal entropy of this thermal density matrix. If I start thinking briefly about the two-sided system, there's another version of the thermal state that now is just doubled. So just to illustrate the point of entanglement and connectedness of space-time, it's pretty obvious that if I would now take two systems and I would just put them in a thermal state, each separately, then it's a factorized density matrix, and the corresponding geometric representation would then look like this. This is the factorized state. And now in this case, the left and the right-hand side are uncorrelated. Sorry, I lost this. That happened. These two sides are uncorrelated, and therefore they are disconnected. So that, again, illustrates sort of why entanglement is really part of connecting space-time. But one comment I should make is that indeed about this question of what is a two-sided black hole, or what is really the origin of the connectedness of the space-time. If I would indeed take two black holes and I let them evaporate independently by putting them in a contact with a thermal bath independently, then you would expect that the final state of the black hole would indeed look like this particular state, because each of the black holes would independently thermalize, and this would be their final state. So you kind of see that the evaporation process in this case leads to a disappearance of the ER bridge. And the two black holes again become disconnected. But I'm going to argue that, especially also because of recent work, but this is sort of a thing I've been arguing for a little bit longer, that there's actually another kind of state that people should be hopefully thinking about, because there are certain mechanisms in quantum mechanics that naturally leads, or actually in physics in general, most of the correlations in our world is correlated. This is why you and I can talk over Zoom. And all those correlations, most of them are actually classical. And there's a very strong mechanism in physics that generally leads to classical correlations over quantum correlations. That mechanism is called decoherence. And decoherence doesn't mean that we're all separately in a thermal state. It means that we're sharing classical information. So it's very natural to start looking at a system where the two sides of the CFTs are actually sharing classical information. And this is actually connected with ideas that are popping up recently in the study of black holes. The story goes by the name of the islands that people are discovering as a region inside of a black hole that's connected in a special way with the outside. And I'll make that connection clear a little bit later. But anyway, so let's look at this particular thermal state, which is now no longer an entangled state, but it's a state that has classical correlations between the two sides, because both sides are in a mixed state, but they're sharing the quantum numbers. In this case, the density matrix does have a Neumann entropy, which is equal to the Beckerson-Hawking entropy. And basically, the proposal is that if the two sides share classical correlations, that they are connected through a geometry that looks like this, where there is indeed a little piece in between where there's what we call an island, because the bulk geometry is continuous over here, and the two sides each separately are in some connected, mixed state. For the experts that have been following a little bit sort of discussion the study of quantum chaos, etc., in connection to black holes, there's this quantity that's called the spectral form factor, and this state that I introduced in the previous slide. Let me still go back to it. I'm giving it a name, by the way. I'm calling it the thermal mixed double state. It's no longer the thermal field double state. It's the thermal mixed double state. And that state is related to a property of quantum chaos systems, namely that if you consider the thermal partition function, but you analytically continue the temperature by giving it an imaginary component, and that imaginary component you can actually think about as being the two-sided black hole evolved in time. So this T is actually the time evolution of the state of the two-sided black hole. Or more accurately, what you're doing is you're taking the overlap of the thermal field double state with the state of the time evolved black hole. You take the absolute value squared of that. And that's a quantity that basically can keep track of what we call, what you could call dephasing, because basically the different energy levels of the system will evolve in different ways. And that leads in this quantity to a set of phase factors that rather quickly basically go to a diagonal sort of distribution on the space of energy levels. And what that means is that once you go to later times, if you look at this particular quantity, you essentially can indeed replace this thing by a delta function. And then you indeed get these classical correlations between the two sides building up because of the dephasing. And it turns out indeed that if you look at this spectral form factor on the thing that's called the plateau, then you can actually write that late time behavior of the spectral form factor, which is this plateau value, as the second Rényi entropy of this particular thermal mixed double state. That's just a mathematical identification. So I'm claiming that basically the late time behavior of the spectral form factor and this thermomix double state have something to do with each other. So the question is, what's the geometry of this of all of this? And it connects, let me very quickly go to this slide and then I'll go to the geometry question. Just to conclude basically, and this is sort of trivial from what I said up to now, is that again, I've introduced these three states. The thermofield double state is what people have been thinking about for a long time as being related to the two-sided black hole. It has no entropy, but its mutual information is twice the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. The mutual information is the entanglement. The factorized thermal state has no mutual information, but it has maximal entropy. And this thermal mixed double sits in the middle. It's an interesting thing to state to look at. And it's a state with only classical correlations between the two sides. So now let me pause and list for questions, because I'm going to indeed introduce sort of the more recent ideas related to islands and things called replica wormholes. How am I doing with time?
Oh, there's a question here.
Okay.
Alejandro, do you want to unmute yourself?
Yeah. Do you hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, just a very simple question. I mean, there is this implication that when entanglement has to do with connectedness of space-time. I understand your example dealing with black holes, but is how you sound very literal. What do you mean? I mean, is if I think of an EPR pair of entangled photons, do you mean also that there should be some Einstein-Rosen breach or some space-time connectedness associated to this type of entanglement, the standard one in quantum mechanics?
Yeah, I'll give a bit more of an answer later. Of course, this is one of the reasons why people were excited about this ERs EPR connection, is that because the implication to some in one direction is sort of clear that if you consider a quantum field theory in a connected space-time, that implies a certain amount of entanglement. So in the context of, by the way, of what I'm talking about right now, when I talk about this thermal, what I call the thermal mixed double way of classical correlations, the question that I'm really asking is, how much entanglement do you really need in order to connect space-time? And it's clear that you have some entanglement because of the fact that quantum fields can fluctuate and there's entanglement because of that. But the implication that people have put forward is really that if you create enough entanglement between two systems, that indeed eventually, if those systems indeed are sufficiently random but nonetheless entangled, that there is an effective geometry that connects the two. So that's part of the idea. And there are certain situations where that idea really starts becoming quite concrete. But again, there's still the tension that I pointed to earlier, that although entanglement seems to imply connectedness and vice versa, I don't think we have fully sort of understood precisely under which circumstances those relations hold.
But an EPR pair can be maximally entangled.
Correct. And it's true that the thermal mixed double is not literally maximally entangled. But I'll come back to your question later on, because indeed in my talk, by the way, I should say that many of the things that I'm talking about right now sound like I'm talking about gravity. I'm going to be talking about gravity. But it turns out that many of the ideas, including these things like replica wormholes and the islands, can actually be discussed in quantum mechanics. And it turns out that for very simple systems, you can still have the same geometric picture, and I'll try to explain that. There was still another question, or it disappeared?
I think it's disappeared.
Oh, it's still there.
Okay. Tejinder, do you want to unmute yourself?
Yeah, thank you. In my opinion, if we want to understand entanglement and non-locality in quantum mechanics, the right way to go about it is to find a description of quantum theory in which there is no space-time at all. Rather than take classical space-time and try to introduce connected classical structures like wormholes. And I honestly found ER equals EPR very contrived. The question is beautiful, how to understand the puzzle of non-locality and entanglement. But since entanglement is oblivious to space-time and causal structure, we must remove space-time from quantum theory. And there are ways to do it. And when you do that, you find that because you're not obstacled by space-time, the non-locality puzzle just vanishes, actually.
No, let me try to at least put that sort of in relation to things that people have thought about. Indeed, people have been trying to build, and that started indeed also with Ryu and Taginagi, relationships, and Rob has done important things there as well, where basically you find relationships between the geometric notion of entanglement, or at least entanglement surfaces that connect the two sites, and Aaron will probably even be talking some about that too. But then you try to make connections between what the geometric story is and what the quantum information theoretic story is. And in some cases, those things indeed precisely match, and in other cases, they don't. And one of the key points indeed is that not every system has a space-time associated with it. And you want to be able to pinpoint which kind of systems do have a holographic dual and which things don't. And again, there are partial answers there, but not complete. And I'd like to continue my story, and I think it will address some of these questions as well.
Okay, why don't you proceed, Herb?
Yeah. Okay, so here's the island. Let me still go back to the previous slide. Hopefully it won't. Okay, it does. Okay, here we go. Sorry, my screen is too slow for my impatience. Okay, here we go. So here's again a spatial slice through a black hole space-time, and basically the new insight that was first obtained by Pennington and also by a group with Marov, O'Meary, Engelhardt, and Maxfield, that there is, when you look indeed at the space-time, you can define things that you call an extremal surface, or indeed a more generalized notion introduced by Wall and Engelhardt, a quantum extremal surface. And the basic discovery is that if you look at an evaporating black hole that's sufficiently old, then there is a quantum extremal surface that is defined once you have made a separation between a region that you call the radiation, which is this blue region here. Then it turns out that there is actually what's called an extremal surface that is located very close to the horizon. And basically the suggestion that was made is that if you look indeed at all the information contained in the radiation, if this is a very old black hole that has evaporated for a long time, then presumably there's going to be a lot of entanglement between this radiation and the state of the black hole. And that entanglement will essentially be enough to essentially purify the state of the black hole, but even to the point where it's going to be possible to reconstruct what happens down here using the information contained in the radiation. Eventually, you should be able to start reading off the state of the black hole. And this region here is called the island. And in the terminology that people have started to introduce, there's a notion called the entanglement wedge, that if you take this region here, which is you can think of as being part of the boundary of the system, that the part of the space-time that you should be able to reconstruct should contain also the region inside of the black hole, namely this island region. So that's the proposal, and there's a very interesting sort of geometric story that is connected with that, which I'll explain now. And I'm going to apply it immediately to the case that I'm most interested in, which is the two-sided black hole. So the same story applies there. You can have a two-sided black hole where you have the external regions that contain the radiation. And the claim is that this radiation that sits here in terms of quantum information should be viewed as sort of the same system as the island, and the island actually as information that can be reconstructed by means of the exterior. Now, what does that mean for the state of the conformal field theory? So I'm going to ask the following question. This is the conformal field theory. It has evaporated for a while, and now there's this geometry which is identified with this island. And the basic statement is that if I start now computing the density matrix of the CFT, or if I start computing the density matrix of the environment of the CFT, I should be doing the following computation. So the environment has a density matrix, and it has a state, associated with the exterior. So that's this region here. It's a mixed state, so it's indicated by a cut, which has the bra and the cat state above it. So these are the left and the right environment, but then there's the island sitting here in the middle. And it indeed means that if I want to compute this density matrix, I have now traced out the CFT. Or vice versa, if I trace out the environment, I should also be tracing out over this region in the island. So the state of the CFT is represented by a path integral on this particular geometry. So these wiggly lines here are now these two black lines here. So here you can already see that I have to consider density matrices that are that are represented by a path integral on this particular geometry. And what's interesting is that if we now start computing the Rényi entropies, that the Rényi entropies are obtained indeed through a method introduced by Cardi and Calabrese, where you have essentially the replica method, which geometrically can be represented as follows. You take two copies if you want to compute the second Rényi entropy of the system, but you then glue this region, this branch cut in a special way to the second branch cut, so that you're basically taking the trace of rho squared. And the new thing about the recent development is that if this region here is basically now removed from your geometry, which is this island region, then there's a new saddle point that appears, which is the replica wormhole, where the space-time through the bulk basically reconnects the two islands in this way. And you can do this, say, for the nth Rényi entropy. And the basic claim is that there is a replica wormhole geometry associated with, some state, which should be such that if I take the nth Rényi entropy, I can compute it through a gravitational saddle point that looks like this. The question I'm going to ask is, what is the explicit form of this particular state? And I claim that it looks like the one I've written before. It's the state with the classical correlations. Now the question is, how would I test that? Now you can start to look at toy models of quantum gravity, which I'll do later, but I'm going to go even further. I'm going to basically claim that this whole story of the replica wormhole story can actually be repeated just for ordinary quantum mechanics. And in that case, this question has a very concrete answer. And then the answer that I'm proposing for a quantum gravitational system will sort of be more natural. Very quickly, I have to jump over this slide maybe. Very quickly, I'm claiming indeed that the story of the replica wormhole indeed has to do with this particular geometry that I had earlier. Because indeed, essentially, for example, if I take this geometry and I want to now compute the second Rényi entropy, geometrically, you basically have to take two of these things and then you have to glue them together in such a way that I'm computing trace of rho squared. And a little bit of mental gymnastics, you can see that you actually start reproducing this particular wormhole geometry. So I claim that that's already an indication that at least geometrically, that this particular figure is the right figure. The question is, what does this state look like? So now I'm going to the quantum mechanics. So let me stop here. I have roughly 5 minutes, 6 minutes.
I think it's a little bit less than that. So my suggestion is that we just keep going. It's more like 3 minutes.
Okay. Let me see if I can do this in 5 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm claiming that if I can here, I'm just going to look at quantum mechanics and I'm going to get make a definition of a replica wormhole in ordinary quantum mechanics. And I can even do it indeed in this coupled harmonic oscillator if I want. And basically, here we go. I have a commutator algebra. And I'm going to have special functions. These Ji's are special functions of X. And if I have this commutator algebra, they're often going to be special functions that you can call Casimirs, or sometimes they're called central functions that commute with this particular algebra. And in such cases, and I should say the following, is that if you have a commutator algebra, and let me briefly still go back to here, then there's a corresponding quantity that we call the symplectic form. That's a classical object that defines a Poisson bracket. But the key point that I'm going to be making use of is that the symplectic form is actually a two form. Whereas normally, if I would think about quantum mechanics, if it's just quantum mechanics, I can think about it as zero plus one dimensional field theory. And then the path integral would really be a sum over paths. But there are many quantum systems actually for which this symplectic two form is not easily written as the exact expression. And then what you would have to do is you have to define quantum mechanics not by integrating over paths, but you indeed have to associate a surface to your path integral where the path is actually sitting on the boundary of another, of a two-dimensional surface. And then this symplectic form needs to be integrated over that surface. In many cases, indeed, this thing is going to be exact, and then I can rewrite this thing basically as a total derivative, which indeed I can do, for example, for this particular term, the JDT term. But there's going to be a remaining part to the integral that's over a surface. Now, if this surface is a disk, then this thing would just define for me the thermal partition function. This is the standard definition of the thermal partition function. So this is just quantum mechanics, and I'm representing already the thermal partition function by a path integral where I'm specifying the topology of a disk over which I'm integrating this symplectic two form. And now I can define a state in this quantum mechanical system, which is just which I will call then this thermal mixed double state, where I take the nth Rényi entropy and I just define the path integral in the same way, but now I replace this sigma by this replica wormhole geometry. So this is my definition of replica wormholes, just in ordinary quantum. And I can do the computation actually in many examples. One easy example, by the way, is the following: is that the previous formula, this formula here, if I integrate out tau. J is a conserved quantity. I just have the integral over omega. Omega is actually a part of my phase, at least it spans part of my phase space. I get something that's called a Poisson manifold. And you can represent this path integral that I had earlier in this first order form by introducing one form fields. And you get something that's called the Poisson sigma model. And this was used indeed by work by Konsevich et al. To basically define star products in quantum mechanics. And the basic idea is that I can indeed for any quantum mechanical system now indeed define a path integral definition of a state by representing the path integral of the field theory in this and for the quantum mechanics in this way, and then. Consider the states defined by these kind of replica wormhole geometries. So that's the idea. The key point, by the way, and this is maybe a good point to end the talk almost, is the following, is that at this point, it turns out that indeed one can easily prove that in this particular definition of these states rho, that these quantum numbers J, which I call the Casimirs, indeed are classically correlated in this density matrix. And the proof of this is as follows, is that basically this J is going to be a conserved quantity. And it is literally conserved that if I insert it at any point on this surface, the correlation function will not depend on where I insert that point, that operator J. And what that means is that the eigenvalue of J is going to be shared between all the boundaries of this replica wormhole. And that implies indeed that the system has this classical correlation. So that's the lesson that I'm learning about from the recent ideas about these replica wormholes, is that these black hole geometries, once they have these islands in their interior, indeed are representing spacetimes with classical correlations. Okay, I have 30 seconds, and I'm going to go through 5-6 slides in 30 seconds. I'll just flash them for
30
you.
30 seconds.
3 seconds. It turns out that you can do the same thing with two-dimensional CFT. If you take your phase space to be diff S1, you go through the whole thing, and you're going to find that basically your the prescription that I just outlined earlier immediately gives you 2+1 Chern-Simons theory with L2R gauge group. So I'm deriving 2+1 gravity through this prescription that I just gave you. By the way, the logic of, that I described here was already in a paper that I wrote with my brother like 30 years ago. So this was something that was understood in the early days of conformal field theory. And you could ask, okay, well, is this a derivation? And we can have that discussion later. You can do the same computation, it turns out, with JT gravity. And again, you find that the things point to the same story. So anyway, here are my conclusions, and that's the end of my talk. You can read them. Thank you.
Okay, I think we can all applaud, or I can applaud. The rest of you can use your reaction button. We are running a little bit over, but if there is one question, well, there are a couple of questions.